It is that time, the 10 and J-Man show. I know a lot of people thought the world was ending today, and it might have. It wasn't because of the eclipse, but because Purdue's in the national title game for the first time in 55 years. Tanner's there with his aviators on.
I can't see anything.
His solar eclipse glasses on and his Purdue swag. How are you feeling? I just want to know.
Friend partying of- like it's 1969, J-Man.
Yeah. They obviously lost that one. So hopefully you're partying a little harder afterwards. Yeah, they're in it. They are in it.
They are in it. Big underdogs, I guess, if for all things considering, national championship game.
Especially two NCs going at it.
Yeah, I've seen the line anywhere from 6.5. My hat's all crooked and bothering me. Anywhere from 6.5 to 7.5.
Dang.
I put that in perspective. I know UConn wasn't the one seed last year, not the one seed overall, but they were 6.5-point favorites over San Diego State last year. Dang. In the championship game. So
disrespectful.
Yeah, nobody's given Purdue. I've seen like two people maybe pick them, but it's people who picked them at the start of the March Madness. Nobody's really giving them a chance. And UConn's been dominant, not only this tournament, but last year. And you know, you look at their track record so far, they've had different guys lead them in scoring every game, whereas Purdue, for their five games in tournament, has been Zach Edey. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, can Purdue win? Yes, they can, but they're going to have to play darn near perfect. Yeah. But, you know, I wanted to shout at UConn all along because I knew that probably meant you're playing for a national championship.
Yeah. So, you don't have to be the best team. You just got to be the best team for 40 minutes. That's it.
Correct.
That's it.
Correct. So I think it's going to come down to, I think the two keys for Purdue are limit turnovers, which they did an awful job at Saturday. And some of that was kudos to NC State's pressure, and win the rebound war. Rebound war is going to be critical tonight because both these teams are really good at rebounding. So. Yeah.
Fascinating matchup that we will get into a little bit later. Do you have some birdie bogey for me?
Yes, sir, I do. And it is NCAA tournament related. Let me see if I can bring it up here. All right. UConn is trying to go back-to-back for the first time since another team, because that team could be part of this trivia. But there's besides UConn's attempting to become the eighth team all time.
Geez.
Go back to back. So there's seven others. You can name five of them.
Okay.
I'll give you a par.
Okay.
If you get six or seven, I'll give you a birdie.
Okay. I'm not gonna get it. Obviously I know a couple off the top of my head, but not gonna get it. Birdie Bogey brought to you by Arlington Public House. Arlington Public House is upscale cuisine and cocktails with a casual atmosphere, located 703 Main Street in Rochester, Indiana. It is pizza night. Buffalo chicken is their Monday night pizza special. That's one of my faves.
Mine too.
Is buffalo chicken. But in their spring specials have come out, it looks like they have bourbon chicken, two tender chicken breasts glazed with house-made bourbon sauce paired with garlic butter, smashed potatoes, and roasted rainbow carrots, lobster grilled cheese, the big pretzel, and pesto gnocchi there at the Arlington Public House. Get some grub.
Yeah, I saw that there. They had buffalo chicken. I saw that today on their Facebook. And just like you, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah,
I love buffalo chicken. I love buffalo chicken everything, especially pizza.
Me too. That's kind of my go-to anymore. It used to be like all beef, but now it's like I gravitate towards the buffalo chicken.
Yeah, it's usually, you know, got a nice spice to it, but nothing too overpowering. So
I like to put a little coleslaw on my sandwich and delish.
Coleslaw on your sandwich?
Mm-hmm. On buffalo chicken sandwich.
Oh, I thought, because we were talking about buffalo chicken pizza, so.
Yeah, I was just talking buffalo chicken stuff in general at this point.
Okay. Fair enough.
Once again.
I'm getting hungry as well. But, I got a lot to talk about tonight. We got Final Four. We got National Championship preview. We got Masters preview and picks, since it is Masters week, even though it doesn't really feel like it because my my sports head's been elsewhere. We also got MLB a full week under our belt now. So a lot going on.
Sir.
But do you want to get educated real quick before Let's get it in?
Always need it.
I haven't even looked at this list, but let's learn about some sporting events that happened on April 8th throughout the history of time. On this day, 1935, can you tell me who won the second Augusta National Invitational Tournament, now known as the Masters?
Sam Snead.
Good guess. Gene Sarazen won the Monday playoff with Craig Wood by 5 strokes.
Good old Genie.
On this day in 1943, can you tell me who went number one overall in the NFL draft?
No.
Frank Sinkwich.
Frank Gifford. Nah, shoot.
Of the University of Georgia. Was the number one pick by the Detroit Lions. Let's see here. On this day in 1963, the Detroit Tigers claim young pitcher Denny McClain on waivers from the Chicago White Sox. He went on to win the Cy Young in 1968, 69, and was the AL MVP in 68.
Shocker that the White Sox screwed up.
On this day in 1966, the American Football League voted in a 36-year-old named Al Davis as their commissioner after Joe Foss resigned. Appointment lasted 3 months when AFL merged with NFL.
Just win, baby.
Just win, baby. On this day in 1969, expansion teams Royals, Expos, Padres, and Pilots all won their first games. Hmm. On this day in 1974, hammering Hank Aaron hit his 715th home run off L.A. Dodger Al Downing, breaking Babe Ruth's record in Atlanta.
Not too shabby. I've seen that highlight a lot of times.
It's still crazy to see those fans running on the field.
Yeah.
And thank goodness they were just there to congratulate him, because that could have been horrific.
Been bad.
On this day, 1976, who was the first pick in the NFL draft?
76. I don't know.
Leroy Selman, University of Oklahoma. First pick by Tampa Bay Buccaneers. On the day 1989, California Angels pitcher Jim Abbott, who was born without his right hand, made his MLB debut. He lasted 4 2/3 innings.
Michigan man threw a no-hitter.
Yes. Who won the 54th U.S. Masters Tournament on this day in 1990?
90?
You have heard of this guy.
I've heard of this guy. Tom Watson.
Good guess. Nick Faudo won back-to-back with a par on the second sudden death playoff hole against Raymond Floyd. Let's see here. Who won the Masters on this day in 2001, 65th Masters?
I'm going to go with Phil Mickelson.
Good guess. Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods
won his second Masters and his sixth major title at the time, 2 strokes ahead of David Duvall.
Overthought it.
On this day in 2003, who won the 22nd NCAA Women's Basketball Championship?
UConn?
UConn beat Tennessee 73-68. Who is the most outstanding player?
That's got to be Diana Taurasi, right?
It was Diana Taurasi. Getting there. On this day in 2007, who won the 71st Masters?
2007. I'm going to go Tiger.
Good guess. Zach Johnson.
Ah.
Won his first major title, 2 strokes ahead of Retief Goose and Roy Sabatini and Tiger Woods.
Where did he go? Did he go to Northern Iowa or Drake?
He was a Drake guy. Drake guy. Yep.
That's right.
But he roots for Iowa. On this day in 2008, who won the 27th NCAA Women's Basketball Championship?
Gonna go with UConn again.
Tennessee beat Stanford 68-48. Volunteers back-to-back titles. Coach Pat Summitt's 8th national championship.
Candace Parker, Naperville's own.
A few more for you here. On this day in 2012, who won the 76th Masters Tournament?
2012. Was that Bubba Watson?
That was Bubba Watson on the second hole of a sudden-death playoff over Louis Oosthuizen.
Was that the one he hit it around the tree?
Yeah, was in the pine straw and hit it around the tree. Yep. On the thing, 2013-1, the 75th NCAA Men's Basketball Championship.
That would be Louisville over Michigan.
Louisville over Michigan, 82-76. Luke Hancock had 22 points. On this day in 2014, who won the 33rd NCAA Women's Basketball Championship?
Gonna go with UConn.
It was UConn. Beat Notre Dame 79-58. Second time a school has won both men's and women's Division I national titles in the same year. All right. And we got two more for you. On this day in 2018, who won the Masters Tournament?
Was that the Sergio year?
Good guess. The Sergio year was one before that. It was Patrick Reed, won his first and only major title, one stroke ahead of Ricky Fowler. Pains me to this day. And on this day in 2019, who won the 81st NCAA Men's Basketball Championship?
2019?
Yes, sir.
That would be Virginia.
Virginia beat Texas Tech 85-77 in overtime. Cavaliers' first ever national title for DeAndre Hunter at 27 points.
Who was MLP? Was it Guy?
It didn't say. I think it was Guy. So, but that will do it for the On This Day segment for April 8th, which is brought to you by, like it is every week, Mooney Woodcrafts. Mooney Woodcrafts is a veteran-owned and operated woodcraft shop based out of Texas with Indiana grassroots. They provide 100% hand-cut custom designs to fit your needs, and their pieces are a great addition to any home, office, or man cave. You can see some of their recently completed projects by visiting them at Mooney Woodcrafts on Facebook and on Instagram. And if you let them know the Tan and J-Man Show sent you, you get 15% off your first signed order. Thad and his wife are at the national championship game tonight. Maybe if Purdue wins tonight, maybe I'll have Thad make me a nice Purdue national champions sign I can put in the background here in my office.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. So get your signs in. And we got a few comments here. Ray Davis is hungry for a Purdue win. And speaking of Thad Mooney, he said, let's go.
I'm going to direct you people to the Boiler Breakdown podcast.
they both listen, so they are loyal to the Boiler Breakdown. So got to appreciate that. So you want to get right into basketball talk.
Do it.
J-Man. So Final Four weekend has come and went. Purdue is victorious over NC State. And then UConn was victorious over Alabama. Both games were somewhat close at points, but I don't think either team that was victorious really ever felt threatened, especially UConn when Alabama shot lights out in the first half and we're down 4.5.
Yeah. The NC State-Purdue game was not pretty.
No, it was a rock fight.
It was not aesthetically pleasing. I thought they had a pretty good plan on Edie, and he still went and got his own. He did have a couple turnovers.
He brought the ball down, which he doesn't do very often. So.
And the thing is, the officials, I don't know if it was overly physical in the first half, but there weren't many fouls called.
No,
which is seven, not
seven total.
Yeah, which I know at least Purdue's used to getting to the line a bunch and getting fouled a bunch, which them as a team don't foul a whole lot. So that's not overly weird that they didn't get called for many fouls. Purdue was up, what were they, 6 at half, I think?
Yeah, I think
and
so.
And Braden Smith played probably his worst half of the season.
Oh, I think he played his worst game, at least from offensive standpoint.
Yeah. And again, they still found themselves up.
Yeah.
He was forcing stuff. I mean, he had two weird backcourt violations, almost like back-to-back possessions, it felt like. Yep. But, I mean, I never really thought Purdue had a shot to lose. I know – North Carolina State kept cutting it down to 6, and then Purdue would come down, get a shot. Yeah. And
Horn was keeping them in the game.
Yeah. North Carolina State's shot selection was so bad at times, though. It was pretty laughable. And then they got Burns in foul trouble, which
his first one, he picked up at midcourt against Braden Smith. It's if you're an NCAA first, we can't have that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And then, he was winded. He didn't look up for the moment. He just didn't look up for the moment.
He was happy to be there.
And then O'Connell pulls his hamstring or whatever he did. He'd been key for them. He had only hit 14 threes all year during regular season. Then he hit 9 in the ACC tournament alone. And then I don't know how many he's hit in the NCAA tournament.
Wow.
So he all of a sudden found a stroke somehow.
I hadn't watched a second of NC State throughout the NCAA tournament, even though they've been on this run. Burns, his passing ability was very impressive for a big dude.
Yep.
He had a couple back cuts that he threw, and But yeah, he's huge, and he could not stay out there for one, foul trouble, and two, he was getting winded quick. Which, when you're that big, I mean, it's hard not to. It's very rare to be built like a Zach Edey playing, you know, 33 minutes a game at 7'4", 300 plus pounds. It's pretty impressive.
Well, Burns averages about 26 minutes a game, 28 minutes a game, somewhere in that ballpark,
which is pretty good for him, for a guy. And like that.
I didn't realize until the other day when I was watching pregame, they benched him for a portion in January.
Really?
Because their coach told him he needed to commit to getting in better shape, pretty much. And he took that to heart, and what he did, and then he played well the rest of the season. Was kind of their horse towards the end. So
he is probably the guy who will be known as like the March Madness. Him and Jack Golke are kind 100%. Of the two guys that 100%. Are going to be known as the darlings of this NCAA tournament, if you will.
Yep. Yeah, Golke's already done some stuff at Barstool Sports in Chicago, and I'm sure now that DJ Burns is out of the tournament, I'm sure he'll get some same opportunities going forward. So, but it all sets up for the Clash of the Titans tonight, if you will. It's one seed against one seed, which I think it's either the seventh or eighth time that's happened in tournament history for the championship. Doesn't happen very often. And I think these are the two teams for the most part all year were pretty much one and two.
Yeah.
Which that doesn't happen very often either. Getting to the end. But like you said, at the start of the podcast, a lot of lines have UConn anywhere from 6.5 to 7.5 point favorites. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Purdue's going to have to play really good to come out victorious. But I think they can keep it close. And if they keep it close, maybe UConn gets a little frazzled out. They just haven't been in a close NCAA tournament game. Well, like I said, Alabama was hanging in there a little bit in the second half. But I'm talking like final 5 minutes or so if it can still be a close game, maybe. Maybe it goes into Purdue's favor, but
Purdue's been blown out what once this year, and that was at Nebraska.
At Nebraska,
They just don't get blown out. It's so hard to get blown out when you have a 7'4" behemoth down there. You can just throw the ball to, and he'll get fouled or.
But on the flip side, they have a 7'2".
They do great shot blocker.
great shot blocker. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it's a fascinating matchup. You have a 7'4", 300-pound guy, then you have a 7'2" guy. Who's much skinnier, but he has the length, quickness, and athleticism over Edey. I would say it kind of balances out a little bit. It's guard play. Sure. Play. I mean, Edey's going to get his. They need Newton to have a good game. They need Castle to have a good game as well. But on the flip side, Purdue needs Lawyer to knock in some shots.
Lance Jones been playing well. He's been playing well lately.
Lance Jones was good the other night.
Yep.
Gillis is still kind of missing threes, which is kind of surprising because he's been.
He had two or three the other day.
Did he?
Yeah. The Tennessee game, he didn't make nothing, but he did hit some the other day.
That's key because Braden Smith's not going to play as bad as he did.
No. If he plays as bad as he did the other day, Purdue's in big, big, big trouble. Like Ray Davis said here, I bet UConn will try to make Purdue start their offensive sets further out than they want. Oh yeah, absolutely.
For sure. The thing UConn, with UConn
gets out in transition and runs. Yeah. So
I was just about to say the thing with UConn, they can turn a 7-0 run into 30-0 run pretty quick. It's all that.
Yeah.
Now Purdue's obviously a lot better than Illinois is, but even the Alabama game though, Bama was hanging around. They tied it. Right. I mean, that Nelson had a huge dunk over Klingon to tie it, and all of a sudden, it went from tie game down two to how did it get to 15 points in like 3 minutes? So that's
they do that better than anybody. Yep. Yeah,
especially in the second half.
Yep. So it's going to be interesting. Like I said, Purdue's got to limit the turnovers, win the rebound battle, and I think then they should be in the game at least.
Oh, for sure. I fully anticipate this game being decided by 10 points or less, one way or the other.
It is crazy to think that Purdue is the seventh Big Ten team to make appearance in the national championship game since 2000. Mm-hmm. But all of them have come up short.
Yeah. Yeah. Man. Michigan's been blown out. Wisconsin was right there. And of course, you said Michigan. Michigan State was killed in theirs. Ohio State had a chance. Illinois, Luther had missed a three with 12 seconds left. That would have tied it and ended up losing.
Indiana wasn't really in theirs against Maryland.
Forgot about Indiana, to be honest.
That was the most improbable one. Was Indiana's for sure, run?
Yeah, I mean, five seed, getting through that great Duke team.
Yep.
they were helped out by playing Kent State in the Elite Eight, though. Well,
Tonio Gates led in Kent State team, but so maybe it's finally the Big Ten's time. But on the flip side, on the women's, you know, Big Ten team hasn't won it since '99, which was Purdue, and Caitlin Clark got her Hawkeyes there this year and last year, but couldn't get over the hump, even though South Carolina was the better team overall.
Oh, man, they were good. I watched the majority of that game.
Yeah, yeah, I did too. And I saw your dad was wearing some Hawkeye gear yesterday.
I did not see that.
I saw that on social media. So,
I would like to apologize on behalf of the Mott family. It won't happen again.
but no, I got that. But yeah, it's I'm excited. I'm very nervous. I've never experienced this in my life. I mean, it's been since 1969 for any Purdue fan to be in this position, and the tournament wasn't as big a deal back then as it is now. But, you know, and I was trying to think this morning, thinking back to Super Bowl 50, I was only 23 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and now I'm 32 years old, and this is the biggest
spring
of my life since. No, they haven't made the playoffs since. I've seen Purdue make a national championship game before the Broncos made the playoffs in those 8 years, but which is fine. I would trade that all day long. But no, I'm nervous but excited. I think UConn would win more games out of 10 than they wouldn't. I mean, I think they will probably win 6 out of 10, but I'm going to go with the Boilers tonight. I can't pick against them. They're going to have to play their best, but I'm going to go Purdue 78-74.
Okay. This game reminds me a little of the Gonzaga Baylor clash back in 2021. You know, Gonzaga came in undefeated. I don't know how big of a favorite they were, but I bet they were about 6.5, 7.5 in that one. And Baylor went in there and blew them out, just killed them. On the flip side, I don't think Purdue is going to blow out UConn. However, I think they get it done. I am picking Purdue. 78-74 is a good prediction. I'll be a little different. 70, that's a little too close. 84-78. I there's something about it. I just think they come out and hit shots early and get that confidence and Purdue wins the national title, and
I already told my wife if it happens, I'm taking the Purdue flag and running around. I said the house. She wanted me to run around.
Jump in the pool, man. Is there water in it?
Is the cover's not? There is water in it, but the cover's not off, and it's not. It's it. I'd probably be sick. I'd probably be sick if I jumped in it. It's not clean, but no, I will. I will not sleep at all if Purdue wins tonight, or if Purdue loses a close game. I won't sleep either way.
You're not gonna sleep if they get killed by 60.
You're probably right. Oh God, yeah. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But shout out to all the Purdue fans and Purdue friends I know and family members that are out in Phoenix. Yeah. I know they've been having a great time. So I wish I could be out there.
If any Big Ten fan base deserves it, it's Purdue. I'll say it because you guys are sad sap losers.
Oh, it's been through a lot, and I think Purdue will definitely have the fan base more than UConn out there.
You think so?
Yeah, yeah, I do.
Yeah, UConn. I mean, UConn's a pretty small school for one compared to
Purdue.
They've been there
so many times. I mean, they're a blue blood, and if they win this one, it's like, where do you put them? They're a dynasty.
That is another interesting point is. UConn, I mean, Dan Hurley, I mean, we're going to talk about John Calipari leaving. You know, UConn's trying to create this dynasty and Purdue's trying to get the redemption story just like Virginia did to a T.
So good storyline either way.
Yeah, good storyline either way. So,
Yeah, maybe if Purdue does get the redemption story, maybe if whoever's the next one seed getting knocked off by 16, assuming it happens eventually, maybe it's not the end of the world because
it's never going to happen
again. That's the blueprint. Yeah. Well, you never know what the transfer. Transfer portal hurts those smaller schools more than it ever has.
Any more championship game thoughts?
Let's see what Ray Davis has to say. Or the NCAA has to be happy because Purdue has the most fan base out there. Purdue had the largest student section. Yeah, I know that a lot of students made the trip out there.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm just ready to go. I hate that I got to wait till 9:20 Eastern time. That's unbelievable. That's brutal. I don't know why they couldn't do it at least at 8:20 Eastern time, but I'm wearing the same hat that I've wore pretty much all year. This hockey jersey that I got for Christmas from my uncle's 8-0 on the season, including 5-0 in the tournament. So I am, you could say I'm not just a little
superstitious.
Superstitious. Thank you. I am superstitious. So
what's your like tradition, big games? Do you like watch pregame stuff? Do you do anything like that?
Yeah, I don't do any of the pregame. I will list, like, if a Broncos have a big game, I'll do the pregame in my headphones, like listen to Dave Logan and those guys. Don't do that for Purdue, but I usually flip on the TV a little early and watch a little pregame, and then
I can't stomach pregame. I have to turn it on like 30 seconds before tip, or I'll just drive myself nuts. Can't do it.
I had Big Ten Network already playing before I came up here because that's been all Purdue coverage. Mm-hmm. So I was watching that before I came up here, but no, I don't have anything too crazy. Just I make sure if Purdue's on a roll with what I've been wearing, I stick to that. Other than that, nothing crazy.
Well, yeah, new Big Ten commish could be there in his first year. He gets a national title, which was Delaney the commish when Michigan State won back in?
I think he was.
Was he? Okay.
We know Kevin Warren never got done for anybody or anything he ever did. So
and he's not going to with the Bears either. My pick six is national championship related. I took the last six times that the Big Ten was in the national title game and picked the MOP from those games. Okay. Of course, no Big Ten players because no Big Ten team had won. So starting with 2019, Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned his name because I couldn't think of his name yesterday. I play Barstool trivia every day on my phone and I compete against my dad. And I couldn't think of it. Couldn't think of his name.
2018, not 2019. Sorry.
Yeah. End up giving up on that question. But good guard. Mm-hmm. Scrappy, tough winner. Winner. He's a definition of a winner. Yeah.
He's hanging around the NBA too.
Yeah. Yeah. He's made a good little career for himself.
Yeah. Tyus Jones.
Tyus Jones. I couldn't have told you he was the MOP of that tournament. That was
a great Duke course, team.
A good Duke team that won in Indianapolis like they always do. So in 2026, look for Duke to win it all when it's in Indianapolis because that's what they do. Yeah. But, yeah, that Duke team was good. Wisconsin gave them everything they wanted for a while at least because that was a good Wisconsin team too.
That was.
Yeah, Tyus Jones, he's still in the league somewhere, isn't he?
Yeah, he was with Memphis for a while. Yeah. He was with Minnesota, I think. I don't know where he's at now, though.
Yeah.
But you mentioned this guy in the on this day, Luke Hancock.
Actually, a guy I kind of forgot about.
I did too.
I don't think he ever really had a run in the NBA. Nah. Maybe a couple years. It's hard telling.
I out there.
But that was a good Louisville team, a team that doesn't have the banner raised anymore. But really, what I remember about that game, I remember Spike Albrecht's first half performance more than anything during that. But that Louisville team also had
Russ Smith,
that's who I was trying to think
Peyton of. Peyton Siva was their point guard.
Peyton Siva was the other one, yep.
And Gorgie Jang, too.
That was like Kevin Ware year, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. When he snapped his leg in Indianapolis. So,
that was bad. That was bad.
Elite Eight against Michigan State, I believe. But yeah, but Hancock could get buckets.
Yeah, he was a good shooter. Good fit for that team, too, because they had some NBA guys there as well. Yep. North Carolina here, Wayne Ellington.
Yeah, and Ray Davis made a good comment here. Mason Plumlee was on that Duke team, still playing in the NBA too. Where's Saul Zone?
He's about the last guy because I don't know if Justice Winslow's still there, or like, was he on that Duke team?
I couldn't tell off the top of my head.
No, Miles was on the team that beat Butler.
Yeah. Who'd you say? I'm sorry,
Wayne Ellington.
Wayne Ellington, who he was?
Carolina.
I about to say Kansas. Carolina. He was in the NBA for a while. Mm-hmm. I remember playing with him on 2K.
Yeah.
But once again, couldn't tell you that he won the MLP. So he was on that. So he won it in 09 over Hansborough.
And was Hansborough there in 09? Hansborough started his career in 05. 05, 06 was his freshman year.
I thought his last game ever was against Michigan State in Detroit.
I don't think so.
I thought it was. Okay. Never mind.
He won it over Ty Lawson. That's
Oh, okay.
What else do they have? Brandon, I don't know. Corey Brewer.
Corey Brewer, yeah, Florida Gator, of course. Well, I want to. Well, you know this one, anyways. I'm gonna give you part of your treatment. Back to back national championship, Florida Gator.
That was a given, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, but he was with Al Horford, Joakim Noah, Lee Humphreys. But Corey Brewer, he lasted in the league not as long as
Horford.
As those. Man, I don't know if he's as long as Noah either, but yeah. We saw him put on a good game for the Denver Nuggets live.
Probably the best game of his Indiana, career.
Against the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah.
But those Florida teams were so good. And
yeah, they're great.
Maybe we'll see Billy Donovan back on the college sideline soon.
Last one here, Sean May.
Your favorite. Flop in the NBA. Sacramento Kings took him early. Never really panned out. I think he got hurt a couple times. Indiana boy from Bloomington, but IU could not get him. His dad played for Indiana, but IU could not get him. He went and played for Roy Williams down there in Carolina and was a great college player, but like I said, didn't do much in the pros. That Carolina team was loaded, just loaded.
Yeah, they were.
Marvin Williams, Raymond Felton, Rashad McCants, I believe, was on that team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sean May.
Sean May, yeah.
Yeah.
Referees and Sean May.
Yeah, hopefully they're a little better tonight than they were that one.
And Ray corrected himself. He said he was wrong. Mason was on the team that beat Bump.
That's what I thought.
2010. Yep. So, well, that is going to do it for the Pick 6 segment. I like that one, J-Man. It's brought to you by Like It Is Every Week. Performer Prints You Promo Group. If you're looking for a trustworthy, dependable resource for your next trade show, company picnic, or a sales meeting, Performer Prints You Promo Group has over 50 years combined experience in promotional products and commercial print. They strive for fast and efficient response to all your print needs, so you need to look no further. Let them be your one-source print and promotional company today by giving Barbara Van Weinsberg a call at 574-210-3815.
Don Calipari.
Don Calipari.
Leaving Kentucky for the greener pastures that are Arkansas. Broke last night. Calipari cannot help himself. Calipari can't help himself in the fact that he loves publicity, and he loves to make it about him. So, of course, he had to break this the night before the national title game. Put a little bit of a I don't know if distraction is the right word for Dan Hurley, because everyone wants him in Kentucky. It's obviously not his fault, and I don't think he's going to leave anyway. So, but yeah, Johnny going to Arkansas. His time was over in Kentucky, and it was over it was over the moment they lost to St. Peter's, in my opinion. And then, of course, losing to Oakland this year didn't help matters for him. But he was never going to win another title there, maybe not even going to get to another Final Four there. Fan base said, you know, run him ragged, and he no longer was passionate about Kentucky, and they were no longer passionate about him. So
I'm still standing on my – on my platform, I say nobody does less with more talent than John Calipari.
Yep, that's true.
He did a good job at Memphis and UMass, but I mean, he had talent there too. But he got UMass to the Final Four with Marcus Camby, got Memphis to the national championship game with Derrick Rose, and they should have won it. Free throws cost him that championship against Kansas. But at Kentucky, he got to two championships, but he won one championship. Mm-hmm. Hadn't been a Final Four in a decade at Kentucky. We're nearing a decade. That's just inexcusable at Kentucky nowadays.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the split is good for both parties. But the reason they didn't already do it is they were going to have to buy him out of $32 million.
Mm-hmm.
And even for a big alumni base that has a lot of boosters and a lot of NIL money like Kentucky, that's still a lot of coin.
Yeah.
And then you got to go hire somebody else. So now with him going to Arkansas, they don't have to pay him anything. 5-year deal, it sounds like, at Arkansas, about $8 million a year. $7 million additional for NIL. Big, big time commitment for Arkansas.
Yeah.
Got to think of the Arkansas backers. They got the Tyson Food family down there. Also, a guy named Jerry Jones. It's a big Arkansas backer
too. Yeah.
So, very interesting. He's got to be competing against Kentucky, still in the same conference, SEC, but I'm going to be fascinated by who Kentucky might go get. I've seen some names on the list. Hurley was the one name that's been thrown out there, but so is Billy Donovan. That's why I threw that out there, even though he's been in the NBA for many, many years now. Scott Drew from Baylor, has been a name that's been thrown out there. Nate Oates from Alabama, even though his buyout's, I believe, $18
million. Mm-hmm. Less than 33 or 32.
Bruce Pearl at Auburn is another one I've seen.
He'd be fascinating there.
Rick Pitino's not going to happen. That's no. A dumb one I've seen. I even saw there's a list of the USA Today. Your boy Brad Underwood was one of the 12 coaches listed.
That is one of the, like, four jobs I wouldn't blame him for leaving. Yeah. I'd be mad, but I wouldn't blame him for leaving for Kentucky. Wouldn't blame him for leaving for Kansas, Carolina, or Duke. That's about it, though. I just don't see him at Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Something about him. I see him more at Kansas than I do Kentucky.
And don't take this the wrong way, Josh, because I think Underwood's a good coach. I don't think Kentucky fans would think he's good enough.
No, I agree. This was his first year getting past the first weekend.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why they didn't like or started to not like.
I was assuming Ray's joking here. He says Larry Brown. Well, Larry Brown is known to be the ultimate job hopper, but he turns programs around wherever he goes. But I don't even know how old Larry Brown is, to be
honest.
He's
got to be in his 80s.
Yeah.
He was at SMU. Yeah. Decade ago now.
Yep.
It's a fascinating job opening. Obviously, Dan Hurley's got to be their first call. You got to make him say no because he's the best coach in college basketball right now. It's hard to really argue that. Other than that, though, Scott Drew would be a guy that I think would do well there. I mean, he hasn't made, though, down at Baylor, but he can get a substantial raise heading to Kentucky. I don't buy the Donovan talk. Because I've heard that from a lot of people on Twitter. Donovan. He hated recruiting 10 years ago. How's he going to hate it now?
Reason I said that was I just don't know how much longer he's going to be in the NBA. So I don't know about how much longer he's going to be the Bulls head coach. And then Bulls don't is any him. Other team going to want to give him a chance?
No. He's a good basketball coach. He's still fairly young. Like, he's not, super old.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Remember when he was the Magic coach for, like, a day?
I do remember that.
Yeah. He went back to Florida.
Yeah.
Crean, what's he doing?
I don't think they'll want him. Nate Oates is fascinating. He seems like he could be a Kentucky guy. He's young. He's a grinder, too. He's a good basketball coach. Bruce Pearl is, for the most part, the same person as John Calipari. Show Claws Bruce, as I like to call him. Good basketball coach, great recruiter. With those, I mean, he's doing this at Auburn. Can you imagine with the resources he has at Kentucky, what he's going to be able to do there?
How about Lloyd from Arizona?
They kind of don't like him down there because he can't get past the Sweet 16.
Yeah, that's true.
I think they should call him, though, because, I mean, he was obviously a hot name coming out of Gonzaga as an assistant, and now he's at Arizona. Sean Miller was also a guy I saw mentioned. I don't see that happening.
And Mark Few's too old, I would say. Probably for what they're. Yeah, you know who a guy who would, I think, be really good there, but I don't think they're going to go this route because I think he's too old? Samson.
Yeah. Great basketball coach.
I think he would do a great job there. It's just they probably want somebody who's going to be more of a long-term fit.
Yeah. Samson could go there and he could get, I mean, doing what he's doing at Houston, he could get them a title within 3 years and they'd love it. But
yeah, that's true. That's true. So, but it is going to be fascinating. It's just when we thought the coaching carousel was pretty much over.
Yeah.
Big domino falls out of nowhere. It's like, hey. Because, you know, right when I saw first report, I'm like, it's just rumored.
It was an an unverified Twitter account from down in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Ray
asked if there's any NBA assistants. I
could be honest.
I'm sure there probably is, but I don't know
a single NBA assistant's name besides Brian. Brian Randall's the only guy who's
an assistant. Ronald Norred.
Is he?
Old other players.
Maybe Musbus does the old switcheroo on USC and goes to Kentucky. I could see that happening, honestly.
Yeah, is he good enough for them?
Little Arkansas, Kentucky.
I don't know. He did get Arkansas to a couple lead eights.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's going to be, I think they'll have somebody within the next week. If I got to make a prediction, I think it'll be Scott Drew.
Don't even have a prediction. I'm boring tonight. Bruce Pearl, just for the fun of it.
Oh, I know Indiana fans will be keeping their eye on it because their series picks back up with them in a couple of years.
I hope it is Bruce Pearl. So Bruce Pearl does not end up in Indiana because he would be a scary one there, in my opinion.
Yeah. So it's you think they would have gave Dusty May a call if he wasn't already at Michigan?
I think they'll give him a call even if he's at Michigan. Yeah.
I would laugh. I don't think that's a great hire for Michigan.
If people are turning them down, which I can't imagine many people's going to turn Kentucky down.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so, unless they still want that pressure.
I don't think they'd think Dusty May would be good enough. I mean, two nine right. seeds.
Yeah,
you're probably not really get you excited.
Yeah, you're probably right. But no, it was big, big newsworthy news. Coming out late last night, so, and kind of took a little thunder away from the national championship game tonight, but it has been odd. I mean, some channels have been covering it big time. Other channels haven't been covering it today like I think they normally do in the past.
Yeah.
That is, so. Yep. Anything else college basketball related?
That you can think I got none. Of? I think I'm tapped.
All righty. Well, this is one of my favorite weeks as a golf fan every year. It's the Masters. The only one of the four major tournaments that doesn't change their location every year. It's always played at Augusta National, Augusta, Georgia. And it's for the prestigious Green Jacket. So John Rahm is the defending champion this year. LIV Golf's John Rahm now. But looking at the favorites, no surprise here. Scotty Scheffler is the favorite to win the Masters. He's done it just a few years ago. He's 4-1 favorite. He's number one player in the world. It just comes down to, is Scotty going to make putts or not? If Scotty's going to make putts, he's going to win the golf tournament. If he doesn't, he could probably finish top 10. Nick Sager right here said Jay Wright would be good.
He also hated recruiting 3-4 years ago, and now it's completely different. And I think he wanted to get out before anyway, but Jay Wright would be really good. I will say that. He'd be fantastic there.
That might be one of the jobs that could pull him out of the studio.
Yeah, I can see that. He's so good on TV, too.
He is. Scotty Scheffler's favorite. Other favorites, your boy Roy McIlroy's 10-1 odds. Still trying to finish that career Grand Slam for the majors, that Masters title that he hadn't even won a major title since 2014. So John Rahm 12-1, Xander Schauffele 16-1, Brooks Koepka 18-1, Hideki Matsuyama 18-1, Jordan Spieth 20-1. That whole group has combined for 15 major tournaments and 3 Masters titles. Other contenders, Wyndham Clark, last year's U.S. Open winner, he's 28-1. Victor Hovland's 30-1. Patrick Cantlay, 33-1. Justin Thomas, 35-1. LIV Golf's Bryson DeChambeau, 40-1, as is Dustin Johnson, 40-1. Let's see. Then we got some long shots here. Ricky Fowler and Tiger Woods, both 120-1. Phil Mickelson, 150-1, which that surprises me because, yeah, he has not been playing good on the LIV the last 2 years. But last year, he got runner-up at the Masters. Yeah. He shot a final round 65, and nobody really knows that course better than Phil. So, but it's going to be an interesting tournament. I've been going back and forth who I want to pick because I know who you're going to pick. Scottie Scheffler would be the easy pick, so I'm not going with that. I was leaning towards maybe Brooks Koepka, but he didn't play well this past weekend, which that never really means anything because he always gets focused there in the majors anyways. I am going to go with LIV Golf's Bryson DeChambeau.
All right. Would that make a lot of people mad? Is he still reviled?
Not as bad as he used to be. Much. Like, he and Brooks are buddies now that they both play on LIV. Like, that's been squashed. I don't know. It's he's not as hated as I think he used to be, but also golf just needs something. The ratings are down, not only in LIV right now, but also the PGA Tour ratings are down.
Yeah.
It needs that juice. But I got to think it's the Masters. Tiger's in it, even though I don't know if Tiger's going to be able to make the cut. But it needs something. It needs something to get it going. So maybe this is the week.
What happened to Justin Thomas?
He's 35-1 odds. I mean, he made the Ryder Cup team last year when he probably shouldn't have. But, yeah, his game's kind of been dipped off a little bit. So,
I wonder how that happens.
I don't know. Some guys just kind of lose it. I mean, David Duval's the picture boy of that. I mean, he was world number one and won the British Open and then had an injury like in 01. I think he won 14 or 15 times on tour, had an injury around 01 and never got healthy again and never was even close to win another golf tournament. So
I think you have a ghost.
It's a dog, but he likes to think he's a ghost. Ray Davis is picking Rory.
You know what? I like Ray Davis's thinking. This will be the J-Man's Book It prediction of the week. Rory's getting her done. Jeez. Book it. Grand slamming time.
Eighth time's a charm. Picking him for you.
For the Masters. For the Masters. I mean, I picked
for the
him
Masters alone.
Every other major.
Yeah. So
that's 32 times charm at this point. J-Man's Book It prediction book brought to you by Indiana Farm Bureau insurance agent Travis Watchering for Life, Home, Auto, Business, Renters, Workers' Comp, and Farm Insurance. Contact Travis at 219-869-4561. His email is travis.watchering@infb.com.
Book it! And since you're talking about Rory, you can get your Rory McIlroy t-shirt on TanandJManShowStore.com. I'm taking Rory. So TanandJManShowStore.com. You can find t-shirts, hats, coffee mugs, pint glasses, stickers, hoodies, all types of stuff. So go get your Tan and J-Man Show merch. We appreciate it, and you'll look great doing so. That's all I got for golf talk. I don't have too much. I'll have more hopefully next week after the Masters is over. Can't say I've watched a lot of golf yet this year. So.
No?
No, my sports has been pretty focused on Purdue basketball lately. And yeah. And you know, J-Man, what I'm going to have to do next week, I'm going to have to do my one of my mock drafts.
Yeah.
It's almost NFL draft time.
Man. I know. I was thinking about the draft today. Like, when is it? It's only like 3 weeks away. Two and a half.
I'm sitting here thinking, well, the Broncos only have Jarrett Stidham as their quarterback. So I think they're kind of showing their cards what they're going to probably try to do in the draft. So,
yeah. So look out for Tanner's mock draft next week, yes. Supposedly. We'll see.
Yes.
Baseball time, as you said, we are a week plus, into the
good week for the Cubs.
Baseball. So yeah, good week for the Cubbies. They had a soft landing there in their first part of their homestand, facing the abysmal Colorado Rockies.
They are just awful.
Swept them fairly handily. But then the old mighty Dodgers came to town, you know, strutting their stuff with Yamamoto and Shohei Ohtani, and Mookie Betts has been on an absolute tear. Freddie Freeman, top to bottom, best roster in the league. And the Cubs kind of took it to them a little bit, taking 2 of 3, scoring 9 runs on Friday, 8 runs yesterday. Absolutely love the way the Cubs have been swinging the bats. Here we are, you know, just 9 games into the season. Number 1 in the National League in on base percentage, .363 on base. They have 10 homers, 4th in OPS. They are they're pitching fairly well too. ERA is about middle of the pack, but they've got some pretty good starting pitching from Jordan Wicks and Javier Assad threw a shutout 6 innings the other day. Shota Imanaga, their high-prized free agent, has thrown 10 innings, given up 0 runs, only 4 hits, no walks, 12 strikeouts. He has been as advertised so far. That bullpen's been good with Alzolay. Mark Leiter Jr. has had a good start to the year. Luke Little's been great. Drew Smiley's been good out of the pen. So the early returns are good for this team. And hopefully they can keep going. Nico Horner's kind of struggling a bit, only hitting .133. he's proven track record to hit. Their best offseason pickup, I know Cody Bellinger was their best on paper, and because of course he was a free agent, but they brought him back, so I'm not even going to count him. Michael Busch traded for the with the Dodgers early in the offseason, first baseman who's top 50 prospect in the game, been very good so far. Hit his first career homer, or a first homer as a Cub, I should say, against the Dodgers on Friday, and made a diving catch to save the game in the 9th inning with 2 outs. So he has been fantastic so far. Dansby Swanson's had a great start to the year. Ian Happ's been fantastic. Say Suzuki, Chris Morrell's been fantastic. So, so far, so good for the Chicago Cubs, and now they have a brutal 9-game yeah, that's a very good point there, Ray, because, you know, the moon and the tides and the sun, you know, it all comes together and usually screws over the Cubs. So that's what they're there to do, is to make Cubs fans miserable. And hopefully They didn't change their mojo. You never know, though. Yeah. Tough nine-game West Coast trip. I hate West Coast trips to begin with, but especially when they're in April this early. They go to San Diego. I think this weekend they're Seattle, and then three in Arizona. So three good teams, too, now that they have to go against. So hopefully they can come out of there fairly unscathed and kind of hang around. But elsewhere in the NL Central, we got the Pittsburgh Pirates keep winning. They took two of three against the Baltimore Orioles. So they're sitting here at 8-2. The Brewers have played some good baseball, 6-2. Everyone in the NL Central is 500 or better. It's the only division in baseball so far to have done that. And the Reds are 5-4, Cardinals 5-5. Then you have the NL East. The Miami Marlins started out the season losing 9 in a row. They're so bad. They lose their stud pitching prospect, not even a prospect. He's up in the big leagues. He's having Tommy John surgery, so he's out for the year. They can't hit. They can't pitch. Management's an absolute joke. They fired their general manager.
Heads are falling off.
Their pets' heads are falling off. They fired their general manager, who was the only female GM in baseball, after she led them to their first real postseason appearance in 2003. And now they started out 1-9. So, karma, a little bit of karma there. AL East, Yankees are looking good, 8-2. Yeah. Juan Soto's been fantastic. They're staying healthy so far.
Well, Stan won't, but far he's playing good.
He's playing, yeah, he had a big grand slam the other day. Yeah. Boston, surprise team through first 10 games. It'll change. They're 7-3, and they're mainly doing it via pitching, which their pitching on paper is pretty pathetic, so I assume that'll change. Baltimore, slower start to the year, same with Tampa Bay and Toronto. AL Central, Cleveland and Guardians. Ooh, man, it's been a couple years and I'm still doing that. Cleveland Guardians 7-2, but got some real terrible news. Stud pitcher Shane Bieber, who had been unreal in his first two starts, 20 strikeouts through his first two starts, blew out his elbow, and he's having Tommy John surgery. And he'll be out for the rest of the year.
Is it just me, or is that starting to happen more and more to guys?
Starting to happen more and more. And, of course, the players and the Players Association are blaming the pitch clock because there's less time to kind of wind down between pitches. Could be a factor. Yeah. Also, you look at the previous you look at the guys' top 20 in velocity, and 14 of those guys have missed significant time with shoulder or elbow injuries. So – they're starting to think that maybe velocity is starting to cause some of these issues. Guys are going like selling out for velocity, wanting to throw 97 to 100.
Right.
Gets you paid, but it also gets you hurt. So it'll be interesting to see how they can do to kind of scale that back. It's going to be hard, real hard to scale that back.
Need more Greg Maddux and Tom Glavins.
Yeah. There. I mean, even a guy like Kyle Hendricks has had his fair share of injuries here the past couple of years. For the most part, he'd been healthy. But, and one guy made a good point. You know, back in the day, Verlander would start out at 91 to 93, and by the seventh inning, he's 97, you know. And part of it could be kids especially are playing way too many baseball games. I mean, I've heard of kids playing 130 baseball games in a summer. 9-year-olds throughout the year playing 130 baseball games. That's not right.
No.
For one, they need to be kids. And two, it's bad for their body. You know, I mean, we're playing what, maybe 15 games, 20 games tops.
Maybe 20 games tops if you're at all, if you made the town's all-stars. And
yeah.
But, you know, back then I remember there was maybe one kid that was throwing curveballs and he ended up throwing his arm out. So, yeah.
no one really threw all that hard.
No. I mean, we were at least brought up to, hey, we're not going to let you throw curveballs or anything crazy until you're ready.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But, in arm issues becoming a issue.
White Sox stink.
Good. Yeah. Especially for these good teams. But yeah, White Sox are horrendous. Jerry Reinsdorf's a joke. He's been a joke forever. And he's still living off that Michael Jordan high of the 90s. And he had one fluke year with the White Sox. But other than that, it's been a whole bunch of nothing from him this century.
A's are moving to Sacramento for 3 years.
Wouldn't surprise me if they just stay there, to be honest.
Who cares?
Who cares at this point? And honestly, they're going to be playing in a Triple-A stadium. They're going to be selling more tickets that way. Yep. It's a 13,000 seat stadium. Their owner had one of the dumbest quotes I think any owner has ever had. Did you see this?
I did, but I don't refresh my memory.
It's going to paraphrase a little bit. This is a nice, intimate little venue, and I'm so excited to see Major League Baseball superstars like Aaron Judge come in here and hit homers, and it'll just be great for the game of baseball. He's excited to watch superstars that aren't playing for his team come in there and hit homers against his team that has no superstars because he's a cheapskate, loser, low life that needs to sell the team, honestly. But that made the rounds. That made me laugh for one, but also made me very mad for the people of Oakland and his team, because they have also sent a guy down who was hitting well over 400 to start the year because he was wearing an armband or a one of those Live Strong looking bracelets that was an anti-ownership. You probably shouldn't be wearing it, but it's a real bad look to be sending him down after hitting 460 to start the season. So Oakland A's, worst organization in professional sports now, in my opinion.
Yep, the Moneyball days are long gone.
Long gone, and Billy Bean ought to be pretty embarrassed about how it's going.
Yep. So,
let's see, what else happened in baseball this week? Not a whole lot, to be honest. I'm running out of stuff to talk about as far as baseball goes. Cubs playing pretty well. Again, West Coast trip's going to be tough. Mets have finally found some wins. They lost their first five. They were 0-5 in their
I was aware. Frank made everybody aware.
Gary Cohen's one of the best play-by-play guys. He goes, it's the seventh inning. There's nobody here. The Mets are 0-5. They have no hits. This feels like rock bottom. It's game six of the season. It's game five of the year. So that was a pretty good quote, but they did find a way, I think, to win that game. And now they're 3-6. So at least they've gotten off the schneid a little bit. No real surprises throughout the game. No real disappointments either. It's all kind of playing out how a lot of people thought it would, to be honest, besides the Pirates being really good.
It's early.
The Pirates last year, didn't they start out like unbelievable? Like, their April was absurd. Shockingly absurd. Let's see what it was. In April, they went 19-9 in April last year. And people were like, man, this team's really, like, actually really good. They went 8-18 in May. So I'm expecting that to kind of happen again to the Pittsburgh Pirates.
And Nick Sager here with Strasburg, another one that
he's a great example. Great example, who just officially retired after not playing since, I think, 2019.
And when he was healthy, he was good.
Yeah, he's a great example. Mark Pryor, another one back in the day. Great example.
So
hit me with that birdie bogey.
Yes, UConn is trying to join a list of seven other teams to be back-to-back national champions. If you can name five of those seven, you get a par. Six or seven of the seven, you get a birdie.
Well, Florida.
That is one.
I believe Indiana did it in the 70s.
No, they did not.
They didn't. Okay. I already lost that one.
You're still good.
UCLA.
Yes, they did it multiple different times.
You know what's sad? When I was thinking Indiana did it in the 70s, in my mind, I had the Cincinnati Reds in my mind. They did it in the 70s. World Series. Different sport altogether.
Yeah.
Has Duke done it back-to-back?
Duke, 91-92. Yep.
So I need three more?
Two more. Out of the four left. These are the hardest. These are the hardest ones because they're the oldest ones. So.
San Francisco with
Bill. Yes. Yes. 55-56.
Oh, hold that one up. Oh, my God. I gotta have a guess. Kansas. I don't know.
Oklahoma State, 1945-46. Kentucky, 48-49.
Why was Kentucky not even in my brain?
Cincinnati, 61-62 with Oscar Robinson.
Ah,
I thought you were going to say Kentucky instead of Kansas. So.
Ah, thanks for watching the Tan and J-Man show. Good luck to T-Dog tonight. I hope you survive. Have a fantastic week, everybody.
I need a bucket.